the UFO conversation has changed quite a bit since 2017. You know, for many years up to that time, I and many other researchers would talk amongst ourselves thinking, well, we're making some progress here in understanding this phenomenon, but how are we ever going to get the mainstream corporate-controlled culture to actually engage in some of these this area of research that we've been engaging in, and how can we just change the conversation? And then suddenly it did change. You have the emergence of an organization, TTSA, to the STARS Academy. I think through their initiative, they were certainly able to get some fresh news coverage in the establishment. We're talking the New York Times. And once we started seeing that, it was actually quite a dramatic change that I saw, and all of my other colleagues, we all noticed. It was quite surprising. But what I would say is that we're just in the baby steps stage here. So essentially, we're now at the point where we can say publicly, without ridicule, there's something out there, and we don't know what it is. That's where we're allowed to go. Now, to someone who's been researching this for decades, we have a long, long way to go beyond that. We actually have a pretty good idea of what is going on there, and so does our military, so does our intelligence community. But the fact that we're even having a public conversation at this level, I have to keep reminding myself, that's a very new place. And the real question is, where will it lead? How far can this actually even go? And I've got my thoughts and occasional doubts about that. One of the frustrations that I suppose I've had over these last few years with this opening of the UFO conversation is that it seems to me that the history has just been siphoned out of the equation. It's as if UFOs started in 2004 with the Tic Tac UFO incident. And I mean, obviously that is not the case. In fact, by removing the 20th century history out of this, we really do some damage to our public discussion of it. For example, it's much easier for people to say, well, maybe these are just some black budget experimental programs that have been developed. And you can say that if this whole thing started in 2004, at least you could speculate that. The reality, though, is that people were wondering these same things back in the 1960s and 50s and 40s. And it's very difficult to make that case, in my view. Not only that, but we've got a number of declassified reports, at least from military personnel, that indicate the objects they were tracking in the 40s, in the 1940s, were being tracked at 9,000 miles per hour and even faster than that. That's essentially Tic Tac UFO acceleration speed, as far as we can tell. So the performance has always been there. And when you bring that history in, and there's many, many other cases, and just that one that I referred to there, when you bring in that history and you start to talk about secret technology, well, that's a tougher thing to do, because now we would be talking about secret breakaway classified technology that's existed for an entire human lifetime. If that's so, that's an important conversation we all need to be having as a society. But by taking that history out, we're really transforming the entire discussion in a way that's harmful to us. It doesn't allow us to understand this as well as we could. I understand why some people have not gone into the history. I mean, I can complain about it, but I do understand. Folks like Lou Elizondo, and I've talked with him about this to an extent, and Christopher Mellon, Hal Putoff, and a few others, like they realize that they're playing a political game here. So they've got a message that they're trying to get to the public. And the thing is, you got something as large as UFOs. This is beyond complex. It goes for decades and decades and decades, and it is incredibly intricate, and it's a steep learning curve for the uninitiated as well. This is not something you just stroll into. And so I can understand their logic for wanting to keep the message simple. Don't make it too complicated. You start getting into the cover-up. You start getting into all the minutia of all of these incredible sightings of years and decades past. That's a lot. So I can understand the motivation for baby steps. In addition, none of those people who are promoting this narrative of we don't know what these things are, none of them want to get into the whole conspiracy angle. That's a whole other albatross to be wearing around your neck. It's it's an argument or it's a discussion that they don't want to have. They all know it's true. They all know there's a cover up. There's a conspiracy to hide the truth. Of course, talk with any of these people behind the scenes. They're as upfront about it as any researcher is. But to go into that realm publicly is difficult. And my suspicion is that their attitude is just fight one battle at a time. Now, that's okay as long as we all remember that one battle at a time. But we must not forget there's a long history of this, and there is and has been a cover-up, a real cover-up for 75-plus years now. A lot of people will ask, well, why now? Why is this entire UFO subject being raised now? The problem when people ask that, or at least sometimes I think when some people ask it, is they're thinking that everything is coming from the government. So everything is an operation, an op by the government for a nefarious purpose. Now, I'm the first to say that that's often true, and I'm certainly not one who has a habit of believing the government whatsoever. But I think we want to keep in mind that the reason this UFO conversation has changed in the last few years, I don't personally any longer believe it's a government initiated thing. I don't believe it's a CIA or intelligence community initiated thing. I think it was privately initiated. Now, yes, the people who initiated it, all or most have significant intelligence community backgrounds. That is true. But it's never been made clear to me that they're actually working on behalf of a deep state agency. I've not seen it. What I have seen is there's been a lot of pushback by the deep state against those very people. We've seen the Pentagon, for example, repeatedly attacking Luis Elizondo, smearing him, actually almost defaming him at times in some of their public statements. It's very obvious. I remember having a conversation a couple of years ago with Brian Bender at Politico about TTSA, and Bender wrote, he wrote the Politico article on the ATIP program when the New York Times pieces also came out. And we were just talking about, does TTSA have resistance within the Pentagon? His attitude was absolutely massive resistance. They have friends and they've got enemies. And that has been my opinion as well. And I'm not saying everything that he says I take as gospel, but it's just another perspective that I thought this makes sense. So the point is, why now? And I think the answer is, you know, when you look at the development of our society over the last 20 years, I'm talking internet, I'm talking communications like Skype or texting or messaging, and like the ability that we all now have globally to have conversations with pretty much everybody. I've always felt it was an inevitability at some point when there would be a push from below, from citizens, to open up the UFO conversation. And it's not surprising to me that that comes with people who've got security clearances and government background. I mean, the fact is government has always had such individuals. You go back to the 1950s, even 1940s, and there were factions then too. And there were people within the military who did want the UFO secret to be out or at least opened up to some extent. I think that's what we're dealing with. And I think in part it is it's a reflection of the changes that we've had in our society. I want to add one thing here, which is that this is not me saying, in other words, we should trust the government with everything that they have to say on UFOs. In fact, the opposite. I think that the US government has never been willingly truthful on UFOs or UAP. There have been a couple of admissions in the last couple of years, mainly by the United States Navy, to the extent that, yes, they admit that they have these encounters. So that's good to have on the record, but that had to be pulled out of them very unwillingly. And for the most part, we still have a lot of official intransigence on the matter of UFOs to this day. You know, we're 4 or 5 years into this new era. And you think about what we've actually gotten out of the United States government in terms of acknowledgments, and it's essentially been next to nothing. I think there's a very clear reason why the UFO subject, as open as it's become, and it has become more open, still has really not gotten through the bottleneck, the choke points of media coverage that it really needs to get. And I think the answer is very straightforward. We have a globally controlled media system. It has been that way for our entire lifetimes. And I'm not just talking legacy media, you know, the old newspapers, the New York Times. We all know about Operation Mockingbird by now. Yes, okay. But we're talking big tech. We're talking Facebook and Google, YouTube, Twitter. What we're in is an era of you know, not being allowed to believe in what are called conspiracy theories. This is a very huge push that's been going on really for the last decade, especially for the last couple of years, that you are not supposed to believe in conspiracy theories. And Google explicitly is now designed, they're designing themselves to protect you from bad thinking. I've just been researching that there's a unit within Google called Jigsaw. You go to their website sometimes. It's creepy as hell. So Jigsaw's mission is to protect you from bad thinking and from harmful digital content. I'm not kidding. So one thing Jigsaw did about a year ago is they contracted, they paid money to Rand Corporation. Rand Corporation is one of the longest and most prestigious defense intelligence community think tanks that we have in the U.S., since the 1940s. Rand does policy papers for the CIA, for the Department of Defense. I mean, they are big time. So Google hooks up with Rand, and their division, Jigsaw, says, we want you to answer, work on one problem for us. How do we identify conspiracy theories at scale? At scale meaning, you know, through algorithms throughout the entire web. And this just happened a year ago. Rand did their study. They reported back to Google. They said, we've developed a really great system. We're using linguistic analysis to identify all of these conspiracy groups and the way that they think and talk. And we can do it. And here's how we did it. And obviously, Google's going to take that and run with it. And by the way, one of the four groups that Rand studied for this were UFO people. The other three, by the way, were anti-vaxxers. The other one was, people who questioned the COVID narrative, like the origins of COVID. So a year ago, when you were not allowed to even question if, you know, you were not allowed to say it came from a Chinese laboratory, that was considered bad, you could get deplatformed. So Rand looked at those people, and they also looked at the other group was, the white replacement or white genocide group. People believe that white race is under attack. Those three and UFO believers were the four that Rand studied. So by virtue of linguistic analysis, understanding how each subgroup talks to itself, they said, yeah, we can actually identify these conspiracy theories very, very effectively. So they give this to Google. Now, what's Google going to do with it? Well, I think we can figure that out. They're going to make these groups invisible. So that's, we have that to look forward to. We have a 24/7 propaganda hammer over the head system that we're already dealing with in terms of what we're allowed to think, what we're supposed to think, and what we are not supposed to believe in are conspiracy theories. And therefore, UFO discussions have to be managed by them. Because, I mean, think about it. What is a bigger conspiracy than the UFO cover-up? It is the mother of all conspiracy theories. There's nothing bigger. I mean, 9/11's not even bigger. Maybe some people will say the COVID lockdown is big. Okay. But the UFO cover-up, can you imagine if the U.S. government were to say, well, don't believe in these other conspiracy theories, but yeah, it's true. We lied about UFOs for 75 years. That is a conspiracy. Like that, there goes the whole game right there. So the UFO cover-up for that reason alone, and there's others, must not be acknowledged, and it will not be acknowledged. The problem we have is that some of the statements that have come out in the last few years, including by people like Lou Elizondo, and also Dr. Eric Davis, let's not forget him, have taken us right to the line of crash retrieval acknowledgement. Even the interview on Project Unity's channel with Leslie Kane and Ralph Blumenthal, done masterfully by Jay. You know, you listen carefully to Leslie and Ralph in that interview, and I think they come within a hair's breadth of acknowledging that there were crash retrievals, but they had to back away. So we've gone very close to some serious public acknowledgement of UFO crash retrievals. But in my view, that is the red line that will not be crossed willingly, because if it's crossed, it becomes very difficult to deny that there has been a cover-up, to deny that there's been a conspiracy. And I just think that can't be allowed. I think we have to see this conversation go to a certain direction, and that is for the health of our own body politic and really for the health of our own society and our own civilization, frankly. And that direction has to deal with the complicity that government agencies, and particularly the United States government, have had in suppressing this information for so long. It's been damaging to the American political system. It's been damaging to the global political system as well. Other nations that are closely integrated with the United States, the United Kingdom and European allies, and really nations around the world, they are nearly all of them still under the U.S. national security thumb. And they can't really do much. Their actions are limited without the United States signing on. So there's been a global suppression of data on UFOs, and it's not healthy. Now, you know, I can understand the fear that these policymakers might have. This could very well be a problem that's bigger than their ability to control. It's totally possible. But we've gone for an entire human lifetime with this denied secret that has itself grown an entire secrecy infrastructure, and very likely an expensive secrecy infrastructure in on many levels. So I think where we need to go is we need to have more of a political analysis of the UFO cover-up. That's got to be done. We also need to start having some adult public conversations on who these other beings seem to be. And for that, researchers need to, you know, and the journalists need to start talking to individuals who have had experiences of their own. That's a lot of people. Not all are equally credible, but there are credible people out there. Those people, as well as researchers who've been diving into this for years, abduction researchers and other experiencer researchers. This is important. We need to know who and what we're dealing with. My own opinion is that we're probably dealing with multiple intelligences that are here. Some may be totally benign. It's not clear to me that all of them are. So we want to understand what that is. Now, are we going to have a political analysis of the UFO cover-up? Are we going to have an intelligent public conversation on what we're dealing with? I don't think that's in the cards in the immediate future, no. Researchers can talk about it, and we do. But having those insular conversations make it to the wider public is really going to be tough. You talk about abductions on YouTube, for example, and you know, right now the worst that happens is Google will put the little Wikipedia link on abductions, you know, to throw some cold water on it. But where are they going to be with this in 3 or 5 years? We're maybe a decade behind China in terms of a true clampdown of social credit type scores. We're already moving along pretty quickly. So it's not clear to me that we're even going to have freedom of conversation on this, on abductions alone, within 5 years. I'd be shocked a few years ago to think that that would be the case, but I think that we're moving there. So we have a window that is slowly, or maybe not so slowly, closing. And I think we've got to try to make a breakthrough into the public realm before it closes completely, because we may not get a chance for a while. A couple of years ago, a very controversial document leaked out to the world. Let's call it the Davis-Wilson Notes, or the Admiral Thomas Wilson Notes. They were written by Dr. Eric Davis at the time of NIDS, National Institute for Discovery Science. I guess I should say this is a document that I was first personally shown in the year 2006. So they leaked out in 2019. I was actually able to see about 3 pages of that document 13 years earlier. I have never given up the identity of the person who showed them to me. I think smart people can probably figure it out well enough, but I've never given up his name. But this is someone who is very, very, very close to that whole scene, that action. But essentially what you have is a situation when back in 1997, Thomas Wilson was an admiral. He was vice chair of the of intelligence for the Joint Chiefs of Staff. It was a position known as J2. So a very important position. He later became chief director of intelligence for the Joint Chiefs, as well as head of the DIA. They're the same thing. And so in April of 97, Dr. Stephen Greer, UFO researcher, actually was able, he was making the rounds in DC at the time, to talk to anyone who was willing to listen about, I guess we could say, deep black classified UFO related programs that had, in his opinion, gone rogue, that were essentially beyond US government control. He had a code name attached to one of the programs that he believed that was legit. So he was able to get a meeting with Admiral Thomas Wilson. Now, accompanying him was the astronaut, Dr. Edgar Mitchell, another Navy commander named Willard Miller, and several other people. And they met with Wilson and one of Wilson's superiors, General Pat Hughes, and a few other people. So Greer gives a presentation, and after that presentation ended, Wilson says, essentially, I'll look into it. He meets with Miller, his Navy colleague, afterward. They apparently talk about UFOs and cover up and even things like MJ-12. Long story short, Wilson went on a 2-month wild goose chase to find UFO related program within the special access program system of the Pentagon. He ended up getting some advice from a few people, including retired Secretary of Defense Bill Perry, and went into an office within the Pentagon known as SAPOC, that Special Access Program Oversight Committee, and within that, the SRG, the Senior Review Group. Within those records, you've got a lot of special access programs that is very, very classified black budget programs. Buried within those special access programs and within those, like nested within it, he found what seemed to be 4 UFO-related programs. He contacts the program manager of one of them and essentially gets the brush off. He gets an in-person meeting, though, with the program manager, the security manager, and the corporate attorney. And is essentially told, this is a reverse engineering program for UFO tech. We have a craft that's in perfect condition, but we've made painfully slow progress. Wilson says, well, it's your mistake that I'm not involved in overseeing this. They said, essentially, screw you. You're not in. He says, why not? They said, well, we really don't have to tell you. You're just not in. Wilson says, well, I'm going to complain. They said, be our guest. He went back to DC. He did complain and was threatened with his career. He got very angry, but what could he do? Now, 5 years after that ends, at the conclusion of that, he spoke. Now, I don't know who it was. Did he speak to Will Miller or did he speak to Edgar Mitchell? I don't think he spoke to Stephen Greer about this. I think it was either Mitchell, and I suspect it was Miller. But word of that initial brush off gets back to what we can call the Bigelow crowd or the NIDS crowd. NIDS was operated by Robert Bigelow. Edgar Mitchell, who was with Greer, was part of that group. So either Mitchell was told directly or he learned through Miller. Mitchell then tells his other fellows at NIDS. That includes Kit Green. That includes Hal Puthoff. That includes Eric Davis. That includes Colm Kelleher. That includes John Alexander, I assume. I don't know about Alexander, but he was part of it. Probably included Jacques Vallée, but I don't know for a fact. And it certainly would have included Robert Bigelow. This is a group of people that have been longstanding friends. They have a long history of sharing UFO-related information amongst themselves. Most of them have security clearances of various types. They have to be careful what they share. They don't go breaking laws, but they share the information they can. This is what they've done. So somehow, through Mitchell, clearly, they learn about this, but they want more details. 5 years later, Wilson retires from government service. It's now 2002. And they send one of their own, Eric Davis, out to meet with Wilson. And he does an interview, apparently in a car, and hits a home run interview, as it were. My understanding is that he did not tape record it. I asked around, and the information I got was that he didn't. But he took very copious notes. Eric Davis is a brilliant man. Doesn't surprise me that he would take copious notes. Those notes turned out to be 13 pages, and those are the Davis-Wilson notes. 3 of those pages were shown to me in 2006, including the phrase where Wilson was quoting what they said, not made by man, not of this earth, not made by man, not by human hands. And I was shown that. And so, in fact, I'll just point out, you know, I talked about this as much as I was able to in 2007, 2008, 2009, there are public statements made by me that anyone can find where I refer to this meeting. I do not refer to the notes out of deference to the individual who showed me them. But I did quote the phrase, not made by man, not by human hands, in an interview I did in 2007, July 1st, 2007, with the Paracast hosted by Gene Steinberg. An enterprising person can go find that interview. So it was obvious that I had read it and that I was quoting it. So fast forward to 2018, when UFO researcher Grant Cameron is shown all 13 pages plus an additional 2 pages of these notes, the 2 pages were a letter by Will Miller, by Australian, I guess we could say researcher or Australian UFO follower, James Rigney, who's a great guy. And James had gotten hold of these documents because Edgar Mitchell had died. And through the death of Edgar Mitchell, a number of his very important papers were going to be discarded by his family. And a man very close to Edgar Mitchell was able to convince the family not to destroy certain papers that were important. And he brought them back home. Rigney learned about it. They JPEG'd a bunch of these. And through that, Rigney showed Grant. Grant told me, he said, as soon as I saw the name Oak Shannon on there, he says, I knew this was the real deal. Like, in other words, Grant was like anyone else who reads these, putting together names and looking at the detail. And Grant didn't really know what to do with these notes. We're talking late 2018. And it's a funny thing. At the end of 2018, I had no idea Grant had these documents. I had no idea they were circulating. But I did a spot on Jimmy Church's show, Fade to Black. It was in December of 2018. And Jimmy just off the cuff asked me a surprise question. Something like, Richard, have you ever seen anything that is so shocking, so incredible, and you've never told it to anyone? He was just throwing that out there. And I decided at that moment to say, you know, the hell with it. I've talked about the Wilson thing many, many times. But what I never had said is that I saw several pages of the actual transcript. And so I mentioned that to Jimmy Church, not knowing that Grant at that very time had those documents in his possession, along with a few other people among whom they were circulating quietly. A few months after that, April of 2019, someone, and I still do not know who, sent me an anonymous link through a Proton account leading to an Imgur page where all 15 pages were listed. If people don't know what Imgur is, it's impossible to search things on Imgur. They're all just JPEG files without, they're not meta tagged or anything like that. They're not searchable. So it's easy to hide things there. Someone showed me the link, and when I saw them in April 2019, I almost fell off my chair. I thought, good grief, this is exactly what I was shown 13 years earlier. Talked to Grant, and he said, yep, now you're in the box I'm in. What do we do? And for a couple of months, that was a difficult question to answer. Like Grant, I did not want to be the person to leak those documents to the world. I wanted them out. I just didn't want to be the one to do it. It's as simple as that. But I'd also decided that if they did not leak out within a few months, and I didn't have a deadline, but a few months, that I was going to do it anyway. I was just going to throw caution to the wind and just do it. Turns out I didn't have to be the one. Someone, and I don't know all the people involved in this to this day, but someone leaked it to a private email thread that I was on, or leaked discussion of it. And once I saw that, now we're in early June of 2019 here, I thought, that's it. So I wrote out a piece and I put it up on YouTube and I called it the UFO leak of the century. And that's really when the shitstorm began, because what you saw were, and this was what surprised me. I have to say, I wasn't expecting it was a disappointing response from a lot of the UFO community, I have to say. There were a number of individuals, some of them fairly prominent, who contacted me privately and said, thank goodness, I'm so glad you said what you did. One, a very well-known individual, and I won't give up who this person is, said, oh yes, I've known about them possibly as long as you, but I'm not in a position where I can talk about it. So, but what happened was that many, many individuals, I was going to say researchers, some of them are researchers, some are just, I don't know who these people are, were all over these documents as like some kind of MJ-12 hoax. And I just thought, can you not read this document? Can you not read this carefully and see all of the data that is in this? I mean, you know, one of the most ridiculous things that I heard, a lot of people heard this, is that it was like a movie script, they thought. And I just thought, are you for real? Like, how can you think that at all? Absolutely not. Eric Davis himself, like, no one, so Wilson has denied them. Of course he has to. Wilson must deny that this ever took place. So does Eric Davis. These people have security clearances on the line. It astonishes me that certain journalists who are in this, who are trying to debunk this, don't take this into account. I don't understand how you can avoid such obvious logic and common sense staring you in the face. If Thomas Wilson, by the way, I have nothing against Thomas Wilson. I spoke to him on the phone on one occasion after I learned about all of this back in 2006. I have nothing against that man. But if you... there is no way that he can acknowledge this, because he would lose his security clearances. He's in private industry. He's had a very successful career after he left the DIA. Eric Davis, same thing. And it's not that these notes are an official government document. Of course, they're not. They're just private notes written by a very, very astute scientist who spoke with Wilson about Wilson's failure to get access to these programs. But nevertheless, even though they're not official FOIA documents or government documents of any sort, they refer to a highly sensitive operation. I begged a few of the other people that I knew within that circle. I said, will you please come forward and acknowledge this? This could be your legacy, all right? We all have a limited time here to do something positive. And the one clear answer I got was, no way, cannot do it. Will not. You know, this is someone who very, very frankly, behind the scenes says, yes, of course. I showed it to you, you know, obviously. But they cannot go on the public record. I got official statements from Kit Green and Hal Puthoff. And, you know, according to relating to Kit Green, as I've said this many times, I got an on the record statement from him, which was, I published it. It was essentially, it's almost comical. It was like, I'm not in a position to comment on the authenticity of this. And despite whatever I think about it, I can't comment, so I won't comment, like some kind of convoluted thing like that. Then he gave me an off the record statement, which I am not repeating here. But I did say, after he gave me an off-the-record statement, may I state that you gave me an off-the-record statement? And after a very brief pause, he said, yeah, sure. So that's what I'm doing here. But these people are in a situation where all of them are constrained. They're all trying to get to the center of the labyrinth. None of these people are at the center. They all want to be. People have to understand, and probably this is probably the case with Wilson too, from what I have learned about him, they all know this is real. They're all fascinated by it. They all want the data. They want the information. They want to be in with the in crowd. They want to get that. And they're, you know, I don't think any of them are really where they want to be. So they're navigating their way to the center of this labyrinth. And so for that reason, they are not willing to risk it. Another indication of just what they're dealing with. I had a conversation in 06, a back and forth exchange with Edgar Mitchell. This is after I'd gotten rebuffed by Wilson when I interviewed him about this. And I remembered saying to Mitchell, or this might have actually been before. Yeah, it was before, because Mitchell in 2004 had alluded to this. He had said to me privately that he had learned from two ultra high level individuals within the government. He didn't say who at the time, but two of them, he said, had confirmed to him the existence of deep black UFO tech programs and programs that had alien bodies. He said this to me directly in Roswell, New Mexico in July of 2004. I was with him there. So I wrote to him after that in 06, and I said, look, you tell me that this has happened, and I realize you can't give up anyone's name, but can you throw me a bone? Can you give me some direction? Can you point in a direction, give me something I can work with? And his answer was very interesting. His answer was, I'd love to, I can't. He said, the people who came to me did so at great risk professionally, personally, and risk to their families. And he said, while they are alive, I cannot and will not put them at risk. And, you know, it's always struck me, like, risk to their families. So I wonder, do we really know what the repercussions of giving up these types of secrets are? One individual years ago described it as almost like being in the mafia. Like, you don't always sign NDAs for everything. Sometimes you just know. You know not to give up the game because bad things will happen. And that doesn't mean that they're going to come and kill you. Who knows? But you can pay a price in many ways. And there's a lot of fear, I think, that these individuals have. And I think that explains why they're so closed-mouthed and why they, even now, despite how sympathetic I know some of them are to getting this conversation validated, you know, the Davis-Wilson conversation, they just won't do it because I think they're terrified of the consequences. The Davis-Wilson notes, the Admiral Wilson notes, are extremely important for several reasons, several reasons. One is as a research tool. You know, we haven't really had a good insight until these notes came out of just how specifically these UFO-related programs are hidden within the bureaucratic structure of the Pentagon. And by looking carefully at these notes, you actually can get a pretty good idea of how this process works. So that's very important. Another reason they're important is they highlight very clearly how the Pentagon has essentially served as a security force for private industry that is working off of tax dollars, frankly, to study and attempt to reverse engineer this technology, presumably for profit. That's kind of significant. You know, you've got an entire system where you have to ask, who is in charge here, right? The oversight that exists within the DOD is by the smallest handful of people. We might be talking two or three or four people in practicality. You could say, oh, sure, the president has ultimate oversight, but realistically, that's just not generally going to happen. President doesn't have time for oversight. Are you kidding? Not at all. You've got really two or three people. And that's, you know, they're not even anything more than simply liaisons, essentially, to private industry anyway, is what it appears. So all of that is evident within these Wilson notes by Eric Davis. I think that comes through loud and clear. I've also learned, I think many other researchers have learned equally, that you've got no less than three major branches of the U.S. government or institutions, I should say, where you've got these special access programs that lead to a UFO scenario. So one is the Pentagon, that's obvious, and that we know best about through these notes. The other two being CIA and the DOE, the Department of Energy. And a lot of people overlook the Department of Energy, but they should remind themselves that the Department of Energy was once called the Atomic Energy Commission, the AEC. And for anyone who's gone through the old UFO documents of the 40s and 50s and 60s, especially the 50s, many, many references to the AEC in conjunction with UFO reports. This is a very, very important thing for them. And the reason's obvious. UFOs have always been seen interacting with nuclear technology sites, whether scientific sites like Oak Ridge or Los Alamos or actual plutonium sites like the Hanford site in the state of Washington, or uranium mines in the Belgian Congo, for that matter, back in the 1950s. We've got document about that. So the Atomic Energy Commission / the DOE would have a longstanding interest in UFOs. And, you know, the good thing is that the Davis-Wilson notes give us an insight as to how we might even look into the DOE if we had the opportunity to do so. It's a similar type of process, I suspect, where you've got a very small bureaucracy, a large bureaucracy and a small opening into these special access programs, and then nested within those, probably at multiple layers, we are likely to find UFO-related, ET-related programs. Obviously, one of the biggest questions that we can ask of this entire phenomenon is how far have earthly attempts to replicate ET tech gone? So how advanced is the U.S. black budget community's reverse engineering efforts at alien technology? That's the $64 trillion question. And I don't know if anyone really has a definitive answer to this. Well, probably a few people do, but I don't. What I can say is that it looks to me that there's been progress made for sure. I think there's been too many leaks. Not every leak is, you know, a sure thing, obviously. We all know that. We've all been in this field long enough to realize you cannot believe every single thing that comes your way. But the truth is there's a lot of smoke. And I think that's signifying at least some fire. So there's, for example, the 1988 story of the alien reproduction vehicle. And I realize that there are people who've got some skepticism about that story, but I believe it. I've never, even the people who have told me privately, they don't know if they believe it. They've never really given me a good answer as to why. No one has ever said that they think Bradford Sorensen was lying. And Brad Sorensen's the guy who has stated, you know, he saw three hovering flying saucers at the Lockheed Palmdale plant known as the Big Hangar back in 1988 when he got in there with a major defense official. And I think that story is true. I've never seen a really good debunking of it. And I've seen a lot of support for it from other sources as well that make me think that he was being truthful. And I think that there's even, there are other sources that tell me, yes, what we call Area 51 or S4, maybe even over at Dugway, or maybe not Dugway, but a few other places. Tonopah is a good candidate. Also Wright-Patterson, where I think some work has probably been done. These are places where there has been some reasonable effort to understand and maybe replicate alien tech. Now, how advanced is it? Years ago, I speculated on something I called a breakaway civilization. And I've often wondered, do we have a true breakaway civilization? Do we have a situation where you've got a radical breakthrough in science that remains classified and essentially almost, would it even be illegal for an outsider to break through some of these technologies and sciences? Like that's possible. I know there are some very smart academicians who would say nonsense, but I don't know how well they understand this classified system, frankly. But I do think that it's entirely possible that we've had breakthrough science. I also think, though, it's possible that we've had partial breakthroughs. In other words, you know, have we achieved energy breakthroughs? Yes, it's possible. It's possible that we've achieved an energy breakthrough due to our study of alien tech. An energy breakthrough that would be prohibited from breaking out to the rest of the world because it would just wreak havoc on our energy infrastructure, particularly petroleum, upon which the United States rests everything that it does geopolitically, rests on the existence of what we can call the petrodollar system. And that's a whole other analysis there, but the U.S. needs that to dominate the world. That's the reality. And so it would be very disruptive to have an energy breakthrough get out to the rest of the world. And there's just a whole bunch of other reasons why it would be disruptive. Might be great for us, might be dangerous for us too, but it would certainly be disruptive. And from the point of view of those people at the top of our hierarchy, disruptions are never good. They don't want that. They only want disruptions if it actually breaks resistance to their consolidation of power, which we have been seeing really for the last year and a half due to other things, basically lockdowns. But otherwise, they don't like disruptions. So I think that there could be an energy breakthrough that's been hidden. But are there other breakthroughs? There's a lot of other sciences going on with creating a flying saucer. There's materials science. You know, you've got to do, it looks to me that you're talking nano engineering down or even angstrom level engineering, even below nano. Have we gotten there? I don't know. I don't know if we've gotten to that level. Propulsion in terms of, you know, is, you know, some version of dealing with the Alcubierre effect, that is warping space-time around your craft. Have we figured this out to get around the faster-than-light barrier? I think that that's actually possible, but I can't say that I know this. I think that theoretically there are answers there to create a little space-time bubble around your craft and cheat, as it were, to break through the light barrier without actually breaking through the light barrier. You can do it through warping space. So there are possible methods that have been learned, but I mean, I just don't know. I don't even know if the black budget world has achieved genuine quantum computing. And that's openly speculated. It's totally possible they have, but there's a chance that they even haven't gotten to that. So there are technologies, I think, that are probably hidden. We've had enough hints and indications over many years that that is so, but in what specific areas? I don't really know if anyone knows. You've got a statement coming from Ben Rich near his death to aerospace journalist James Goodall. James Goodall is a hell of a guy. And he knew Ben Rich. Of course, Rich was head of Lockheed's Skunk Works division for many years. And when Rich was dying, this is like a week before he died in the 1990s, he had a phone conversation with Goodall and he said, look, Jim, we've got things out there that are 50 years beyond what you can imagine. And, you know, Goodall can imagine quite a lot. So Ben Rich is saying 50 years beyond that. So that indicates that there have been breakthroughs, but what he didn't tell Goodall is what specifically have those breakthroughs been? What areas of science have they been? And got no idea. Don't know.